And when he made up his little mind to have or do anything, all the king's horses and all the king's men could not change that pertinacious little mind. Mama thought the deer too young to be taught to conquer his prejudices, but Papa believed that it never was too soon to learn obedience. So Master Demi early discovered that when he undertook to wrestle with Parpar, he always got the worst of it. Yet, like the Englishman, Baby respected the man who conquered him, and loved the father whose grave, no, was more impressive than all Mama's love pats. A few days after the talk with her mother, Meg resolved to try a social evening with John. So she ordered a nice supper, set the parlor in order, dressed herself prettily, and put the children to bed early, that nothing should interfere with her experiment. But unfortunately, Demi's most unconquerable prejudice was against going to bed, and that night he decided to go on a rampage. So poor Meg sang and rocked, told stories, and tried every sleep-provoking wile she could devise, but all in vain. The big eyes wouldn't shut. And long after Daisy had gone to Bylow, like the chubby little bunch of good nature she was, naughty Demi lay staring at the light, with the most discouragingly wide-awake expression of countenance. "Will Demi lie still like a good boy, while Mama runs down and gives poor Papa his tea?" asked Meg, as the hall door softly closed, and the well-known step went tiptoeing into the dining-room. "Me has tea," said Demi, preparing to join in the revel. "No, but I'll save you some little cakeys for breakfast, if you'll go bye-bye like Daisy. Will you, lovey?"
"Yes."
And Demi shut his eyes tight, as if to catch sleep and hurry the desired day. Taking advantage of the propitious moment, Meg slipped away and ran down to greet her husband with a smiling face and the little blue bow in her hair which was his especial admiration. He saw it at once and said with pleased surprise, "Why, little mother, how gay we are tonight. Do you expect company?" "Only you, dear." "Is it a birthday? Anniversary or anything?" "No, I'm tired of being a dowdy, so I dressed up as a change. You always make yourself nice for table, no matter how tired you are, so why shouldn't I when I have the time?" "I do it out of respect to you, my dear," said old-fashioned John.
"Ditto, ditto, Mr. Brooke,"
laughed Meg, looking young and pretty again, as she nodded to him over the teapot. "Well, it's altogether delightful and like old times. This tastes right. I drink your health, dear." And John sipped his tea with an air of reposeful rapture, which was of very short duration, however, for as he put down his cup, the door-handle rattled mysteriously, and a little voice was heard, saying impatiently,
"Oppy doy, Miss Tummin."
"It's that naughty boy. I told him to go to sleep alone, and here he is downstairs, getting his death of cold pattering over that canvas," said Meg, answering the call.
"Mornin' now,"
announced Demi in a joyful tone as he entered, with his long nightgown gracefully festooned over his arm, and every curl bobbing gaily as he pranced about the table, eyeing the cakeys with loving glances. "No, it isn't morning yet. You must go to bed and not trouble poor Mama. Then you can have the little cake with sugar on it."
"Me loves Papa,"
said the artful one, preparing to climb the paternal knee and revel in forbidden joys. But John shook his head and said to Meg, "If you told him to stay up there and go to sleep alone, make him do it, or he will never learn to mind you." "Yes, of course. Come, Demi." And Meg led her son away, feeling a strong desire to spank the little marplot who hopped beside her, laboring under the delusion that the bribe was to be administered as soon as they reached the nursery. Nor was he disappointed, for that short-sighted woman actually gave him a lump of sugar, tucked him into his bed, and forbade any more promenades till morning.
"Yes,"
said Demi the perjured, blissfully sucking his sugar, and regarding his first attempt as eminently successful. Meg returned to her place, and supper was progressing pleasantly, when the little ghost walked again and exposed the maternal delinquencies by boldly demanding,
"More sugar, Mama."
Now this won't do, said John, hardening his heart against the engaging little sinner. We shall never know any peace till that child learns to go to bed properly. You have made a slave of yourself long enough. Give him one lesson, and then there will be an end of it. Put him in his bed and leave him, Meg. He won't stay there. He never does unless I sit by him. I'll manage him. Demi, go upstairs and go into your bed, as Mama bids you.
Son,
replied the young rebel, helping himself to the coveted cakey, and beginning to eat the same with calm audacity. You must never say that to Papa. I shall carry you if you don't go yourself.
Go away. Me don't love Papa.
And Demi retired to his mother's skirts for protection. But even that refuge proved unavailing, for he was delivered over to the enemy with a "Be gentle with him, John," which struck the culprit with dismay, for when Mama deserted him, then the judgment day was at hand. Bereft of his cake, defrauded of his frolic, and borne away by a strong hand to that detested bed, poor Demi could not restrain his wrath, but openly defied Papa, and kicked and screamed lustily all the way upstairs. The minute he was put into bed on one side, he rolled out on the other, and made for the door, only to be ignominiously caught up by the tail of his little toga and put back again, which lively performance was kept up till the young man's strength gave out, when he devoted himself to roaring at the top of his voice. This vocal exercise usually conquered Meg, but John sat as unmoved as the post, which is popularly believed to be deaf. No coaxing, no sugar, no lullaby, no story. Even the light was put out, and only the red glow of the fire enlivened the big dark, which Demi regarded with curiosity rather than fear. This new order of things disgusted him, and he howled dismally for Marmar as his angry passion subsided, and recollections of his tender bondwoman returned to the captive autocrat. The plaintive wail which succeeded the passionate roar went to Meg's heart, and she ran up to say beseechingly, "Let me stay with him. He'll be good now, John." "No, my dear. I've told him he must go to sleep, as you bid him. And he must, if I stay here all night." "But he'll cry himself sick," pleaded Meg, reproaching herself for deserting her boy. "No, he won't. He's so tired he will soon drop off, and then the matter is settled, for he will understand that he has got to mind. Don't interfere. I'll manage him. He's my child, and I can't have his spirit broken by harshness. He's my child, and I won't have his temper spoiled by indulgence. Go down, my dear, and leave the boy to me." When John spoke in that masterful tone, Meg always obeyed and never regretted her docility. "Please let me kiss him once, John." "Certainly. Demi, say good night to Mama, and let her go and rest, for she is very tired with taking care of you all day." Meg always insisted upon it that the kiss won the victory, for after it was given, Demi sobbed more quietly, and lay quite still at the bottom of the bed, whither he had wriggled in his anguish of mind. "Poor little man, he's worn out with sleep and crying. I'll cover him up, and then go and set Meg's heart at rest," thought John, creeping to the bedside, hoping to find his rebellious heir asleep. But he wasn't, for the moment his father peeped at him, Demi's eyes opened, his little chin began to quiver, and he put up his arms, saying with a penitent hiccup,
"Me's do it now."
Sitting on the stairs outside, Meg wondered at the long silence which followed the uproar, and after imagining all sorts of impossible accidents, she slipped into the room to set her fears at rest. Demi lay fast asleep, not in his usual spread-eagle attitude, but in a subdued bunch, cuddled close in the circle of his father's arm and holding his father's finger, as if he felt that justice was tempered with mercy and had gone to sleep a sadder and a wiser baby. So held, John had waited with womanly patience till the little hand relaxed its hold, and while waiting had fallen asleep, more tired by that tussle with his son than with his whole day's work. As Meg stood watching the two faces on the pillow, she smiled to herself, and then slipped away again, saying in a satisfied tone, "I never need fear that John will be too harsh with my babies. He does know how to manage them. and will be a great help, for Demi is getting too much for me.